the hardest thing.
Tell me, you, what do you do here at Burning Man? How long have you been here, and how many times have you been?
Well, this is my fifth year.
Oh my god!
This is for.
Oh my god! No, no, no! Is that? You want? Yes.
I don't think they're that cold, though.
I don't give a fuck. Oh my god! Yes. Talk about pie providing. I've been biking all day. I do not have underpants on. My vagina's been on my seat.
Ouch!
It is just brutal. I had a pothole. I think I just gave myself a gynecological exam with ply dust. And so I see the only thing I can actually see with my crusted over slant eyes right now. As your camp. And you're sleeping, and I, of course, wander in, totally disturb you, and you're not mad. You have coolers of food and beer that are still kind of cold, and you're nice enough to talk with me and hang out. It's so classic Burn.
I got a story to tell. So Joe and I worked together for a long time in Hewlett-Packard quite a long time ago. And Joe had a dream when he turned 60, and the dream he had was to fly in a lawn chair powered by helium balloons. So we put Joe to over 20,000 feet in a lawn chair with helium weather balloons connected to it.
Fuck off.
On June 22nd, 2013.
Now, how does one launch themselves in the least supportive and least well-made product of all time, a lawn chair?
Yeah, actually, it was one of those anti-gravity chairs that you could lay in and kind of kick back
That's
in and stuff.
Comfy.
So real comfy, and it was bolted to a platform that we had made out of honeycomb stuff, very light, and it had arms kind of out on the edges that we could connect the balloons to, because it ended up being about 88 balloons that were, you know, over 6 feet.
You trusted your life to 88 balloons? Yeah.
it gets worse. We had engineered this thing to have, have all this fail-safe and cameras and GoPros on the corners and everything. And then when it came time to launch, things had gone wrong and we didn't get enough lift. In the end, we cut loose all of our safety equipment, all of our camera equipment for down to the very just. He had a quilt and he had a bottle of water about that size, his insulin because he's got diabetes, his sunglasses, and his hat. Because it came down to it, we got 300 people standing in a circle. It's daylight. It's about to go, and it wasn't going to fly. And we could just see him getting very upset. And I said, Joe, do you want to fly? Are we, do you know what risks we're going to take? So he's like, let's fly. Him and I just decided, which everybody's standing around wondering what we're doing, and we just start cutting stuff that we had meticulously put on this craft until it was light enough to fly. But then once it started flying, we left the GPS tracking system on it, so we knew where he was, and he had a radio. There were some things you just have to have, right? So it's the one day that the wind doesn't blow in the right direction. I mean, for the last 3 or 4 months, it was out by Mount St. Helens, and it should have taken us and gone over the Cascades and ended up in Idaho. But instead, the winds were swirly and kind of stagnant that day. So he just did a big corkscrew into the air up to about 11, 12, 13,000 feet. And he just kept going around and around. We could see him. We didn't move. We were sitting there in lawn chairs just watching him go round and round and round instead of getting and going like we thought he would, get up and start heading east. So when he got to the top, we got near it, then he started drifting off. But we realized that his scent was kind of going too fast. So we were telling him, dude, you're going to have to pop some balloons. And so what we had was a way that he could get out of this chair. He's roped into the Jesus nut, we call it, right at the top where everything comes together. And he got out with a stick with a razor blade on it and started popping some balloons. And then we told him, sit down, you're way the heck up there. But I sat there for 45 minutes. I told him, sit down, you're too high. He's like, no, I got to pick this stuff up. Because what you do is you get a lot of the dross, the stuff that's left over from the balloons, and you can have it in a big pile. And then if you're dropping real fast, right before you're going to hit, you can throw it off, and it gives you a little lift because you have less weight. So he was thinking that. He wasn't thinking real clear. We'll put it that way. It was too high. And, he's a...
Literally too high.
Literally too high. And we'd had these, we'd even had these protocols that we were going to follow and to make sure that if he felt like he had hypoxia, that we were going to go through these things so that, he could test and make sure his judgment was good. Anyway, all of that went out the window like everything else. And so he just says, pilot's prerogative. I'm going to get this stuff. And so anyway, that's the last thing we heard. And so then we said, Joe, sit down. You're too high. You're going to pass out. So I'm sitting there with his wife, as close as you and I are, staring me into his, oh my God. Staring into my eyes. Oh my God. And I'm going, hey, Joe, base to Joe.
Oh my God.
And we don't get nothing. So there's a discrepancy of whether it was 25 minutes or 45 minutes. But anyway, it was quite a while that we didn't get anything. But we could still track him. We could tell that he'd gone up to a height and now was starting to come down. And we knew where he was. And then he came back on the radio and told, you know, I said, I must take a little nap. So anyway, we only went, I think, about 40 miles total because we did so much iterations of corkscrewing up and back and forth. And it was a total of like, I want to say over 120 miles that he traveled. And in the end, people say, why don't you have a parachute? So he did it without a parachute and a bicycle helmet.
Yeah, like that's not fucking sick.
Well, and the thing is that it was all about bumping, you know, and landing and stuff like that. The balloons themselves, we could have lost probably 70, 80% of the balloons, and they still have more lift than a parachute. So unless you're going to jump off of the craft, which I don't know why you would, you stick with the balloons. You know, we could see them miles away. It was a big, giant, looked like a thing of grapes, you know, because it was these 6-8 foot diameter balloons, 88 of them, with a little thing hanging underneath of it. So you could see it from miles away. And anyway, he ended up out into the Gifford Pinchot National Forest and got caught in one of the bazillion trees out there, 60 foot high. So he spent 4 hours in the air and then 4 hours stuck in the tree. And then the rescue guys came and got him, and they said, oh, man in the tree. And they did their expert job and climbed up there and got him down. So because I helped Joe do that, I brought in my brothers and my kids and a whole bunch of other people to make this project work. Joe gave me, just handed me a Burning Man ticket and said, you're going with me. So I came to Burning Man first time in 2013 as a thank you for putting Joe up to 21,000 feet.
Yeah.
Every time we come here, we have this little session where we talk about, you know, what we should have, could have done it. And we're just
maybe not done it.
Well, we're lucky, and we just have the luck's always been with us, it seems, and, you know, knock on wood, we've done okay. But, you know, this guy's climbed mountains, and we hitchhiked to the Yukon, built himself a raft with an axe, and then went down the Yukon on a raft he made. So this guy has already done crazy things. It isn't that much out of the realm, and I've just been one of those, you know, professional enabler types that goes along with him. So anyway, it's like, what do you do now? You know, so we're kind of preparing to go down the Mississippi next year. Looks like we might try to do a Huck Finn thing from one end of the Mississippi to the other.
You should bring one peanut.
Yeah.
One lighter.
Exactly.
And like one shoe for just for fun.
We're thinking a solar canoe. So I don't know. We'll see. I've traversed the Mississippi, so we'll see if he wants to.
You hate civilization, huh? The first thing I noticed about you is you are not wearing shoes and looks like you have not been wearing shoes for 15 days.
Yeah.
So where do you live?
Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
I have chickens too. Everyone from Portland, so that's how you greet them. You're from Portland. I have chickens too.
When you first came here, what were the major things that it did to your head?
I don't know. I just started doing Temple Guardian about 3 years ago. And
what does it even mean, Temple Guardian?
Well, basically, it's a building that's made to burn, so we don't want people to burn it before it's time. And then when we burn it, we don't want them to get hurt. So in the meantime, we want them to be very welcome, make sure they feel very welcome and very safe. So it's everyone's temple.
I mean, and it's all volunteer, right?
This it's is all like volunteer. Yeah, and so for me, I start at 3 in the morning, and I get off at 8 in the morning. And so that means that I've seen the sunrise out on the playa now 5 days since I've been here.
But so you came from like an engineering background.
Yeah.
So like, I can't imagine you saw a lot of sexy stuff in public. The amount of like nakedness and sex and stuff, like for my mom at least, was tough. Not tough. It was really disorienting, right?
Yeah.
The like, just dicks out all the time. I guess maybe you didn't have a problem with that coming from Portland.
Oh, I don't know. It's all a personal thing about that stuff, right? I mean, the first time I walk through, I feel like I'm a housewoman from Michigan or something, and just going, oh my. So I don't know. And as far as the nakedness goes, you can also go to Key West. They have Fantasy Fest, and I'd come from there not too long ago. They have several different ones that where people run around with body paints, you know, totally naked.
That's not naked.
But I know. But it's, you know, that's what they do. But then there'll be people that like, you know, put on one paste.
At least their dick has like a funny picture on it. There's just dicks here. There's little dangly dicks just walking around.
Well, did you see the pickle parade?
Mm-mm.
I think that's what it's called. But anyway, that's what I was told. I did a wrong turn the first year I was here and just came in the middle. And I ran right into this parade that was just getting started, and all the guys had their dicks up. And then they would put you in line by where how you hung. The joke that I tell everybody is that they just kept telling me to go back in the back of the parade.
Back of the line.
Back of the line. I don't look at the dicks. I look at the tits.
That's right. Oh, fun, that's totally fair enough. Yeah. Will you tell me, so you guarded your temple, but it seems that the temple guards did not do their, the Burning Man guards did not do their job.
Yeah, I can't really, I mean, it's just a horrific situation. I mean, it changed, all I know is that, you know, it changed our whole protocols when we burned the temple. And from what I understand, they almost lost the ability to have a burn permit because, you know, really, if you use a protocol and it's worked so far, then you can say, yeah, I'm going to continue to use that. But if it fails, you can't continue to use those same protocols. Because
I don't understand is it's all locked off. You can't go anywhere near it. The guy ran under the barricade into the fire.
There was no real barricade. I mean, I don't know what you mean about barricade.
I assume there was like, there's always like a circle where you can't go.
Yeah, there were people in, so they form, you know, basically it's human kind of fence. So you have a perimeters, and then behind those you have, you know, the perimeter guys, and then you have the ranger guys behind those, and then you have the sandmen behind them, and then typically.
What are sandmen?
They're the kind of elite ranger kind of guys, but usually they're really fast, big dudes, and so if you get past the first two lines, their job is to put you in the sand. What if they can get a hand on you and put you down? They're not going to be gentle. They're going to tackle you to keep you from getting into the fire. So I don't know. There's Sandman. He ran into the fire. Yeah, and he was dodging all the guys that were trying to catch him, and he actually had some sort of physical altercation with the first guy that tried to stop him, like pushed him down or pushed him away, or I don't know. The neighbor had it on video. But when we burnt the temple, we doubled our guard. We had we had almost 600 people out there, and we'd had probably half that. So we trained about 300. I mean, we thank those DPW guys and the cafe guys and the former temple guardians. Everybody came out to a call. They went through a quick training, and then they were spaced like four or five of them with every regular temple guardian. So we had twice as many, and they put a fence up so that you couldn't. You had a 6 foot high fence. You would have had to climb too. And
you guys are so organized.
Right.
How the fuck do you do it? How many people are working to make Burning Man happen for free?
I don't know. I mean, you look. There's a third of the people were here before it was open. I mean, we're all buddies running around. It's a very different vibe, you know, when you're putting it all together. It felt bigger last year, actually.
It felt louder, too.
You know, and it was better next year.
Right. I just can't imagine. At some point, this has got to break, right? Like, you can't. How does it? It's so big already.
It's big, and the bummer is that every time, you know, something weird happens, like that guy, you know, that with Burn in the Man, that changes it, you know, dramatically forever. And so that's the thing that I'm bummed is because I always thought it was very intimate that you sat by the fire and, you know, you could get close. And it was kind of up to you how far you were going to stay away. And now we don't get those kind of options. You know, you stay out of this line or you're in trouble. And now we'll probably have a fence. We'll probably have a physical barrier to keep people from being able to do that. You know, you must have been hurting. That's all I know. But it's still, it's a selfish asshole thing to do. These neighbors to us right here, this guy brought his daughter in. She's probably 22 or 23. And, you know, she was had a front row seat to that. And she just, you could just see it in her eyes that it really, you know, bothered her.
They could see him die?
Yeah, they were right there. They
like, how close are we talking about?
They said it was just right in front of them. They were taking their phone, and this guy just, you know, ran up because
saw him get squished by the fire.
He was in the fire. He ran into a part, and then it was like that structure fell, and the guys that are out there have radios and stuff. So there's somebody telling them, said, "Fuck, it's coming down. Get out of there." And they look up and see it coming out of him. So they had to leave that guy for, you know, 20 seconds or something. Walk out, let that shit fall down. Go back in, grab him.
How did they go back in? A thing looks like
silver suits.
The fuck, that thing looks so hot. The color of the fire is like a neon.
I don't know
green.
How they do it either. But they have equipment.
Dudes went into the fire to get his.
They pulled him out by his foot, yeah.
By his foot. And did people see him come out? Oh my
they
God.
Saw him. I mean, that's what I understand. They saw him get him out by his foot, yeah. And then.
And it was just like a core. Like,
yeah, it was crispy. I don't know.
Oh my God. This place is fucking dangerous. I would think more people would die every year.
The art cars are a lot safer, it seems. You know, DPW's done it.
A woman died on an art car last year.
Yeah, but then again, they made
Shagadelica.
Some...
Shagadelica. We were on the front, mother of two. She was on the front. She ran the front of our car. She fell off and ran her over.
Right. And they make now guards to try to keep that from happening. So now they have to get inspected. And, you know, that's what you got. You learn from the mistakes, I guess. And it's, we're, you know, we're a city of what, 70,000, 80,000? Things are going to happen every weekend there in any city.
I just, it's so dangerous. I mean, even today, I was pretty sure I was going to die. Just the heat. I mean, it was 115 all week. This place is a death trap. The dust will kill you. The sun will kill you. The cold will kill you. The fucking heat. I mean, I'm so broken.
Yeah.
I don't know what part of me is the most broken. I'm not sure. Could be my throat. Could be my eyes. Could be my nose. Could be my, like, just the bruises. You know, you ever take your first shower from Burning Man? You're like,
what? I know.
What did I do? Because the dust covers, right?
Joe told me a story from the medical. He works at the medical greeter.
Joe, so you're a medical greeter? Crazy motherfucker.
Anyway, there was a lady there that came in that was said she was 90 years old.
Oh, my God.
And she said it was her first year, and I don't know, she needed some minor thing. But she said she'd been dreaming about this since she was 85.
No time like the present.
I met your mother, by the way. I met a lady that was seven. What did you say she was?
73.
73. She says, I think I'm the oldest woman on the playa. She had brown short hair. She was in a golf cart.
She was in a golf cart?
Yeah.
You met my mother?
Well, she's a very talkative person, too,
she's
right?
She's very talkative.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's why it would remind me. It's because the way you talk.
Anything else you want to tell me about why you love Burning Man?
It's one of those things hard to put your finger on why you love it, but it's like-minded people. Everybody we talk to has a great story of all the stuff that they've done. Oh. Met some skydivers and pilots and, you know, and people have done some just amazing, crazy things.
And that's what we come in.
Well, that's why I love coming here, is to meet the people that, you know, they're doers and shakers, and they're not watching on TV. They're actually doing something. And I mean, that's why I think I'm here, is to meet those people.
Like, you're a crazy motherfucker. I respect you immensely, but that is the craziest shit ever in my life. Thank you so much for your time and letting me hang out with you. I'm not going anywhere. But that's it, everybody. I'm a fucking wreck. As always, I've learned absolutely nothing except one thing, which is I don't need anything, and everything can be lost. It's totally fucking fine. I want to thank the amazing humans that volunteer their time and love to help put on the unbelievable infrastructure that is the burn. The people from the Department of Public Works, the people from the Department of Monster Vehicles, the guys who do the porta potties, the guys who do the lighting, the people that are in charge of the fully staffed ER, the volunteers who take tickets, the people who are greeters. I mean, everyone and anyone who is involved has to donate so much of their love and energy and kindness to make this monstrosity of an event function as well as it does. As always, there's problems, and this year there was a really sad thing that happened, and I know it was a really catastrophic sight for most people to see, and really traumatizing for most of the people that witnessed it and even heard about it. And so to those that were affected by that, I send you the biggest hug. You just never know what causes people to act the way they do, and I don't really know what to say about someone who chooses to sacrifice their body to the fire in this way, but I am so in awe of the love it takes to put this thing on, and every year I am completely stripped bare to the bone, and every year I learn lessons that help me, you know, come back into the so-called default world and spread the lessons to those around me. Those lessons include talking to strangers, you know, offering kindness to those in need, helping your fellow man even when you're busy or late, just stopping what you're doing and lending an ear or some money or your heart or your hands to someone who needs it more than you. I was totally destroyed when I met this man. I was broken, exhausted. My throat was drier than Gandhi's flip-flop. I was just a mess. And he offered me the last of his beer and some granola bars and sat and shared his stories with me. And, you know, it's moments like this that just re-energize your heart and allow me to keep doing the work that I do, to remind people that there is always a story and always a laugh and always a bit of kindness to be found if you open up your eyes and your hearts to people in a real way.
I've got a couple more episodes left for you. I want to also thank my mom once again for putting up with me and loving me through thick and thin. This was a beautiful burn for her and for me. And as some of you may or may not know, she did end up finding love. And her boyfriend, Nick King, is an amazing photographer who works at Center Camp every year. So every year I would recommend that you find him at Center Camp. He's amazing. He just came out with a book called Burner Profiles. It is incredible. I'm gonna leave the website on my website page. Thank you, Nick, for taking the time and having the patience to break through the remaining layers to get right into my mom's heart and to see what's happened to her. You just can't imagine. She is a woman transformed. And so for anyone who feels like they've had all their adventures, that there's no more love for them, that they are unlovable, or their body is imperfect, or who they are isn't good enough for someone else to love, you're wrong. There is always someone for you if you are open to it. And one of the biggest lessons that I've learned is that you don't even know how closed you are until you're open again. Wherever you are, I send you all the love that I can from this gloomy, gray fall day in New York City. I'm getting ready to put all my Halloween costumes on. This year, I'm going to be Patsy Darling. Take some time. Go look at the leaves. Go breathe in nature. Breathe in the air. Hear some crickets. Listen to them sing their beautiful night songs. Have the best weekend.